Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Brought to you by Invigorate Health in Mount Juliet. Look and feel your best with IV therapy, medical weight loss, testosterone, health and wellness, and body shaping treatments. More information can be found at InvigorateHealthTN.com. Corey, what's going on? I thought your Bears last night for a second were going to get my Packers, but let it slip away at the end.
I'll tell you, Jakeem Grant had that turbo button, didn't he?
He sure did. That was unbelievable to watch.
I was like, hey, might be a good idea to try to get him the ball once in a while.
I think so. the last stand for Matt Nagy. No more last night.
Yeah. You know what? They weren't humiliated, so that was the victory. Because I thought they were going to lose like 45-13. So I'll take what I got.
That's right. Valiant effort from the Bears last night. So Corey, the Titans get the shutout yesterday, the first home shutout since 2000. Obviously, a lot to like on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, it was a struggle at times. Overall, what did you think of the Titans and their performance yesterday?
Well, I liked it because I felt like what I saw was kind of a reset for the team. They came back, you know, and we talked about they haven't practiced a lot for the last month. They came back and they practiced for a week, and they came in and they played an inferior opponent, which is something we talk about, and they came out ready to play and take care of business. They didn't do anything flashy. They didn't try to do anything flashy. All they did was say, hey, we're going to take care of the football, we're not going to commit penalties, and we're not going to beat ourselves today. We're going to let Jacksonville do that. And Jacksonville certainly did that. But they tackled well. They didn't commit penalties. They jumped on turnovers when they got the chance. I know they only got, I think, 3 points off four turnovers, and that's certainly not a number that they're going to be happy with. But, again, I don't think they did anything to try to push the field and try to put the ball in jeopardy whatsoever because they didn't have to. I mean, I felt like once they had 17 points that game was over. And so I felt from a lot of standpoint, you know, from where they were coming from, that was a very good start, and you build on it from there.
Well, I'm feeling kind of negative today, Corey, so I must say. I agree. Relative to those awful performances and losses of the Jets and Texans is much better than that. Mm-hmm. And I like how the defense played for sure against a bad opponent, but I like how they played. I'm looking at this offensive line, and I don't think we give, on a positive note, I don't think we give Ryan Tannehill enough credit for the beating he has taken this year. Yeah. The beating he has taken. And again, yesterday, you know, they did not try to push it downfield, and you're right, that creates less opportunity to make mistakes. But I also feel like they didn't feel like they could. Now, that could be because at receiver, they don't have anyone right now who can do that. But also, I feel like they don't feel comfortable with much but Tannehill getting the ball quickly out of his hands because they can't protect him. And he got hit 10 times, got sacked 4 times. But he got hit hard a few times. And I wonder what's the upside of this offensive line down the stretch here?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, it was one of the first things that Vrabel brought up. He said, we gotta take care of Ryan. And he's absolutely right. Was he even sacked 37 times now?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's way too many. And, you know, so many times we say, oh, he's gotta get rid of the ball. I mean, he got smoked a few times. I mean, we're guys just kinda came in free. I think most of those times that's communication issues when a guy comes in free like that. And I think that's, to me, that's a little easier to fix than when guys just get beat. Now, we've seen guys just get beat, so that happens as well. I think the offensive line, and you're right about this, Joe, has been up and down this year. You know, we've seen performances from them where they go, we're like, okay, here we go. You know, like in New England, you're like, here we go. You know, they're going up and down the field. They're creating huge holes. You know, the Jags knew they were going to run, and so they did a good job of bottling things up. But they should have been able to take advantage of that, and they weren't. And so I think it is a concern because it only takes one game to lose in the playoffs, as we saw last year against Baltimore, that they develop some consistency. Now, you know, part of consistency is having the same five guys out there, and we thought we were starting to see that, although I think Raj left for a little while, but eventually came back in. But, you know, this group has been with each other long enough where communication shouldn't be an issue. Now, you've got some new backs back there, but I don't know any of us are blaming them. They have to get it together because, you know, what do we talk about with Tannehill? Tannehill's a good player, right? But he's got to be put in position to be a good player. You know, he needs good weapons around him. He needs a running game, and he can't be playing flat on his behind, which most guys, you know, can't do. So I agree with you. That group's got to play better. They've shown the capacity to play better. They've just got to find some consistency.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey, what did you make of Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown, their performances yesterday? And with that, with Zach Cunningham now coming into the fold, what do you think of that move, and what does the rotation look like in your mind once Cunningham and David Long Jr. are back and available as well?
Well, you know what? I'm just about putting healthy bodies on the field at this point, guys. I'm not confident that enough guys are going to stay healthy to where we're talking about a rotation. I mean, those two got through the game yesterday, so that was good. You know, the Jayon Brown interception was a heck of a play. It was not a great decision by Trevor Lawrence, but it was a heck of an athletic play by Jayon Brown. And Rashawn took advantage of a ball that Laviska Shenault just took his eyes off of and went right through his hands. But it was one thing that drives me bananas in this world, and that is dropped interceptions. Because people always say, well, that's why he plays defense. And we all know that turnovers are the biggest play in a game. You cannot drop interceptions, and Evans had an opportunity, and he took advantage of it. I thought the whole team tackled well, and that goes for those guys as well. So, you know, look, I thought it was a good game. Do I think that this team has the athleticism to challenge those guys, really, and create mismatches? No. No, I don't. We'll see how they do later. But if they can get more of that from Rashawn Evans in the future, they'll be fine. You know, Zach Cunningham, you know, you don't have to rush him into the starting lineup. But, I mean, look, the guy's a tackling machine, and I certainly think on first and second down, they're going to be looking to get him on the field.
Well, Corey, I really focused in yesterday on a guy I think is going to be so important moving forward. Not the only one, but they need to be able to threaten people, and that guy is Julio Jones.
Yeah.
He did get through the game, but what did you think of him? What do you think of him moving forward?
Well, I'm like you, Joe. The big victory was getting through the game. What he did was pretty ordinary, right? I mean, four catches for 33 yards, but you're just breathing a sigh of relief that he's able to play next week because they need that. Like, I think the days of him, you know, stretching the field and being your threat there are probably over, especially because I don't know if you can ask him to really open it up without worrying about something on him blowing up. It's like the car at the end of the Blues Brothers. You just need it to get to the finish line there before it all falls apart. But, you know, you saw the catch over the middle. You know, he's still a big target who can go up and get the football and move the chains. And, you know, he's not Batman anymore, okay? He needs to be Robin. And Batman right now is on the bench, okay? And they need to get Batman back out there. I mean, I certainly like Julio more than the other guys they've got. You know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina has been a nice story, and he does make plays occasionally, and you don't feel awful about putting him out there. But, you know, we talk about the same things, you know, each week in the passing game without these guys, that, you know, they don't have the guys out there with the capacity to do a ton. So we can't sit here and say, well, Akina's, you know, going to be better and getting a ton, because he's not. All right, he's not Julio Jones. He's not. And, you know, let's face it, this is still kind of like preseason for Julio because he has spent so much time on the mend. And hopefully, and hope is not a strategy, but hope is where we're at right now, hopefully he picks up his stride here in 2 or 3 weeks and becomes a more prolific playmaking role in the offense. I don't know about you guys. I thought yesterday that they were going to make a point to get him 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, like when they had first and goal at the five, I was like, all right, you've got to dial up something, you know, back of the end zone to, you know, the big target. And I was really surprised to see them not try and take advantage of that. You know, what does that do for you in the game? Maybe nothing, but bigger picture down the line, you know, something extra to kind of get that guy going. And I, you know, look, I don't, he's a veteran. I don't know that he needs that. Maybe I'm the one who needs that, and maybe the fans are the ones who need that. But I was really surprised to see them not take, I don't think they took a single shot at him in the end zone yesterday, and they had opportunities.
Corey, last thing for you here. What do you think of the Urban Meyer situation in Jacksonville? The handshake yesterday. I mean, look, the record, honestly, is not that surprising to me. They're 2-11. They're an awful football team. I think we knew that heading into the year. But how they've gotten here and the ride that it's taken is pretty incredible. What are your thoughts on Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, and could he be fired after year one?
Well, we still don't know what his contract is, and so we don't know how that settles things. But, and look, we know today in this age anybody can be fired at any time. He's had misstep after misstep after misstep since taking over this job. It's not college football. It's not. And you can't run it that way. It doesn't work that way. These are grown men on your coaching staff and on your football team. And, you know, the great coaches, and he has been a fantastic coach in his career, so I don't mean to demean that at all. But, I mean, the great coaches really evolve, right? I mean, we've seen Saban evolve. He actually embraced offense. We've seen, you know, Belichick evolve. This is a defensive guy who embraced offense and turned an offense over to his quarterback. And, you know, we've seen the great coaches really change, and he hasn't really changed. Still, I think, running like 70% of his plays out of shotgun, you know, trying to bench the best offensive player on his team. He just hasn't done a heck of a lot of things to make sense and to make his life any easier. I don't think it's going to get better, all right? So if I were them, I would certainly turn the page. By the way, they're down in the game, and they've got 3rd and 9 at, like, the 40-yard line, and they bring in Carlos Hyde, their slowest running back, to run a draw play. I mean, what is happening here? I felt like I was watching Waterboy with the football for dummies on the sideline. I mean, it was catastrophically, you know, bad decision. You know, yeah, I don't like the draw call there because you got 9 yards to go, not 5. But you're giving it to your slowest guy. I know he went to Ohio State, but that doesn't make him any faster than he is right now. There's no Ohio State turbo button. There's only old. Okay, there's only old taking a lot of hits. There's only 3.5 yards per carry, which is what he was averaging. So I don't get what he's doing. I don't get his stubbornness. I don't get his willingness to blame everyone but himself. And if I was Shad Khan, I'd have a big, big problem. Look, if you're asking me about week 18, is he going to be on the sideline? No, he's not.
Really had a really nice read option play on 3rd and 9 earlier in the game too. It was good stuff from Urban Meyer yesterday.
By the way, I didn't like the Titans 3rd and 9 draw play that Jeremy Nichols lost 5 yards because you were already in field goal range. So I didn't understand that one either.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
All right, hey, just let me say before I go, how about those Predators?
Yeah, man.
Unbelievable. Who saw this coming?
Yeah, they're playing awfully well right now. Awfully, awfully well. Corey, we appreciate you, my man.
All right, later, guys.
Corey Curtis brought to you by Invigorate Health in Mount Juliet. Look and feel your best with IV therapy, medical weight loss, testosterone, health and wellness, and body shaping treatments. InvigorateHealthTN.com for more information. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Corey had to say there. Welcome your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Bowl season is the best season. ESPN The Game Nashville is your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff, brought to you by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown and Central Barbecue. 312 Pizza Company is the perfect spot to catch every game during the bowl season. For a list of games carried on 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, hit up our website at thegamenashville.com/bowl games. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Thanks to Corey Curtis for joining us in the last segment. Mason on YouTube says, Joe is that uncle at Thanksgiving dinner that thinks the world is ending. Mason, not a big fan of your negativity today on the show so far, Joe Rex Road.
Well, in my day, Mason, when I walked to school both ways, barefoot in the snow, all was well in the world.
That's right.
I will say, I feel like sometimes I'm more on the sunshiny side of things, like after losses and stuff.
I agree.
My feeling yesterday, I saw a lot of, and I think the shutout, it's cool. Like, it's cool for the guys. It was a cool scene on the sideline. The Titans starters are over there, and they're urging on the backups, and they got the shutout. And it was a feel-good day, much needed for the team. So I don't discount that, and I do think the shutout's great to get a milestone like that. Regardless of who you're playing, it's hard to shut anybody out in the NFL. I look at that overall performance, and to me, and I know the Steelers they're no world beaters, but to me, that overall performance loses in Pittsburgh and loses at home to San Francisco, which I watched a lot of that game yesterday and have watched a fair amount of them recently. That's a physical, tough football team that gets after the QB, that runs the football, that has a tight end who is just absolutely outrageous in George Kittle. If the Titans don't get a whole bunch better here in a short period of time, they're going to be 9-6. And then who knows what the Colts are going to do, but they could be all of a sudden looking at some real urgent games, and you can forget the one seed and all that stuff. Right now, they're right there. They're the two. They're tied. But, like, they've got to make a big step up here in the short term. And so maybe that's me being too negative. The offense right now has a lot of issues.
Matt from Camden on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The Titans offense is going to have to figure something out. Their O-line, especially in the middle, has not been very good this year. The most consistent player this year on offense outside of Henry has been Quisenberry. He's had a heck of a season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you told me going into this year that the Titans would have this kind of plummet in pass protection,
yeah,
I would have guessed I would have looked at right tackle immediately and said, yeah, well, you know, like Raidens isn't ready. Of course, as far as we know, Raidens will never play tackle again. Who knows? But whatever, Raidens isn't ready. They couldn't, you know, Lamb didn't work out. Quisenberry has solidified that. It really is every other spot. And I know we've got some texters on the text line also on the Lawan hating crew. I would definitely say that, no, there were definitely a couple plays yesterday for sure that he didn't look good. Now, yep. I still think he's probably, you know, he would not be one of my top issues. Again, I think it's the interior of the line for a variety of reasons, largely health and age. Age isn't the reason with Nate Davis. I think with the other two guys, it health and age. Nate Davis, I think it has to be health. I don't know another explanation for Nate Davis's decline in performance from last year to this year. I mean, there's nothing else that would adequately explain it.
How surprised are you that Golden Tate has not found his way onto the field yet? You had the Patriots week, which I think most people understood in terms of you're just getting into the building. I wasn't surprised that he didn't play against New England. You've got a bye week, and I would assume, I mean, like, Golden Tate probably wasn't off in, like, you know, Key West sipping Mai Tais during the bye week. My guess is he's probably getting into the playbook, hanging out around here, trying to get a role for himself on this team. And then you got all week of practice last week, and Golden Tate still was not active. Were you surprised by that over the weekend?
No. I mean, if you really think about it, one, he's out of the league. Two, I mean, Golden Tate, obviously the Titans like big physical receivers, the way they play, right? So Nick Westbrook-Ikhina fits in perfectly. He's been great off, away from the ball in the run game. I watched Julio Jones all day yesterday. He had some real nice blocks. He's a big physical guy. Corey Davis is a big physical. So Golden Tate, to me, helps if he's in the slot. And I think Chester Rogers, like, the idea that right now Chester Rogers, a guy in the league, would be better than Golden Tate, a guy who's been out of the league, isn't surprising. At his best, Golden Tate was better than what Chester Rogers has been in this league. But I mean, if you watch Golden Tate late in his career, he was losing the fastball. So I guess I wouldn't totally rule it out still moving forward, but kind of seems like it's just going to be a thanks for stopping by and good luck to you.
I agree, although I will say that Chester Rogers made me nervous like three times yesterday, either fielding a punt or returning a kick. Made me really nervous yesterday. It was an adventure at times out there.
He does. I mean, there was one where he didn't fair catch, and I couldn't believe he didn't fair catch. I'm like, there's three guys full speed about a foot from you.
Yes.
But he didn't. So as long as he doesn't turn around and let the ball hit him in the foot again, then I guess he's fine.
Tyler from Berry Hill texting in. Can someone explain to me why Foreman was moving the ball well and then pretty much gets benched for the second half? I know he got a little banged up, but he was clearly the best back. This is coming from Tyler from Berry Hill.
Well, it's got to be the injury.
Yeah.
So, again, the TV broadcast, apparently, I think someone on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com, mentioned that. And I think Emily Proud tweeted that, too. Like, they the broadcast, they mentioned some kind of a wrap on his arm. I guess it was had to do with a stiff arm on a particular play. That's the only reasonable explanation for Foreman not to be involved in the second half, that he was hurt. So, obviously, the Titans need him to be good this week and moving forward, because I think he's emerged as the clear best option.
Chris texting in, is this offense incapable of reading a defense and picking up a blitz? It seems a lot of the games this year where Tannehill has been sacked, a lot has been the offense not noticing or seeing a blitz coming. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's a good point. And Corey Curtis brought up too, I think we assign these things sometimes to just like players getting beat. And I agree that yesterday for sure, and at other times, I mean, it's going to happen to you, of course, in this league, right? I mean, people are going to dial up blitzes at times that are just perfect for the play you have called, or you're not going to see, or they're going to do a great job disguising it. But I would agree that overall communication and recognition need to be better for sure. It's not just at times just getting beat by, you know, the guy you're trying to block. There are some things that are getting through clean that shouldn't happen as often as they are, actually. And again, those are some of the bigger hits that Tannehill takes, of course, when you have a guy, a blitzer, who has a free shot at him.
Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. live at the Corner Pub downtown at 151 Fifth Avenue North prior to the Titans taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Get into the defensive performance yesterday on that side of the ball. How much of that was the Jags, and how much of that can you carry forward if you're the Titans? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Speaking of Preds Pick to Click, another one on the board for Joe Rexroad the other night. 7 on the year so far. Roman Josi finding the back of the net the other night. Way to go, Joe.
Atta boy. Feeling good. Good to be back off Schneider. That's good after my horrible pigskin pick 'em.
You didn't even do that weekend. Bad, Joe. Didn't you go .500?
I mean, all I know is I think I had like a perfect week in front of me, and three games completely fell apart on me. So, so it's fine, but I mean, like when it's right there, especially what the heck happened with the Browns? What did the Browns do?
They almost went full Browns, is what they did.
I mean, I know they ended up surviving and winning the game, but my gosh,
it's pretty
disgusting.
Impressive. The onside kick was pretty incredible. That the Ravens.
Speaking of onside kicks, last night that was a nice one from the Bears.
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about that game. That was,
but your Packers covered. Your Packers
covered, Rob.
That was an atrocious game, and if I had a phone to call Matt LaFleur today, there'd be some changes that would be made. But I'll leave that alone. The special teams coach needs to be punted out of the door today. It's awful.
So you got Jared wants to fire Craig Ackerman badly, and now you want to fire – who is the special teams coach in Green Bay?
Mo Drayton. Get him out.
Mo Drayton! You're on thin ice, Mo Drayton. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's like the worst special teams game I've ever seen. That's not an exaggeration. Like Matt Schneidman from The Athletic has put out a list of what happened last night. Here he was. 97-yard punt return allowed, 34-yard punt return, 42-yard kick return, 40-yard kick return, a kickoff out of bounds, you muffed a kickoff that went out of bounds, you fumbled a punt return, and you had a 22-yard punt and a muffed onside kick. That was the special teams last night for the Packers.
I love fired up, Robbie.
Some teams go an entire season without having that much. It happened in one game last night. It's good stuff.
Am I glitching, by the way, because Gregory on Twitter has put out the max headroom thing, which usually means that.
Sometimes. It's not anywhere near as bad as it's been in the past at times.
The best is when your voice goes fast. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. I probably sound less dumb when that happens. let me know, and I can huddle around the router, you know?
That's right. So, Joe, obviously a good day for the Titans defense yesterday. You get the shutout, the first shutout at home since 2000. You limited Jacksonville to 8 yards on the ground. So Jacksonville, 8 carries for 8 yards, which is amazing. I mean, James Robinson had a 5-yard carry in the game. He ends up with 6 carries for 4 yards. So tough one for James Robinson yesterday. So there's a whole lot to like defensively. You force 4 interceptions from Trevor Lawrence. My question for you is, how much of that was the Titans' defense yesterday, and how much of that is taking on what has become an absolutely atrocious offense in the Jacksonville Jaguars offense?
Well, you have to give the Titans' defense credit, especially when you compare game to game. They played the same team and gave up 198 rushing yards, and then they give up 8. I'd like to know how many times a rematch has seen a 190-yard reduction in rushing yards allowed. That's pretty impressive. I mean, it was – the Jaguars moved the ball way too easily against the Titans in the first meeting, and they just had nothing going yesterday. So you have to give the Titans credit. I think you give the Titans credit up front. I think you give the linebackers credit. I mean, I think Rashawn Evans, his return, he made the most of it. And he knows that he's going to be, by the way, battling for snaps here moving forward. He knows who Zach Cunningham is. So I think you definitely give the Titans credit. They caught the interceptions that were thrown to them. They made some good plays. Jayon Browns was probably the best of those plays, but Christian Fulton and Buster Screen both get one. I think you give them plenty of credit. I guess the question is, again, just focused on the defense. That defense, that defensive effort, is that enough moving forward when you play actual competent teams? Someone on the text line was like, have you watched Roethlisberger play? To paraphrase, he's trash.
Cheeks.
And I responded, I don't know that he's cheeks, but he's trash. And I responded, did you watch Roethlisberger in the second half against Minnesota? Because, I mean, they were terrible. They were down 29-0. Sometimes that happens. You look pretty good and say, look, he's about done. I think this is it for him, okay?
Yeah.
But I don't buy that Roethlisberger can't dink this defense up and down the field. He certainly can do a better job than Trevor Lawrence. I mean, we remember last year what he did. The one time you think he tried to throw it downfield, Jayon Brown picked him off, but he still got them with good receivers.
You talk about locking into a cornerback. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger found wherever in the world Jonathan Joseph was last year and just says, you know what, I'm going to throw it that way.
Yeah, he's going to be sad this year when he looks at the film. He's like, where's 33? where's 33? I need to see 33. Yeah, so look, I think they can have winning performances that give them a chance to win with this defense, especially if you get Bud Dupree back, if you get David Long back, if you get Janoris Jenkins back. I mean, you'd have better corner depth, you know, but they're getting healthier. And I do think also they set the tone early yesterday with Denico Autry with that great move and sack, and then Harold Landry getting sack number 11 on the same possession. I think that set a tone for the game. So overall, it's very positive with the defense. It's still just, you know how it is, it's like grading on a curve. And then like the opposite is when you play a team this bad, you got to be careful to take too much from a winning performance.
Caleb on the text line, the defense has just been playing better as of late, but Jacksonville definitely helped them yesterday. I'd still like to see Bowen call more rushes when you're ahead by 10 or more. Also, the most consistent thing on the offense has been how Saffold is going to end up sitting on the field at least twice a game. So there you go.
Well, I'd give Roger Saffold a lot of credit. You know, just like we give Tannehill credit for taking those hits, so many hits. Roger Saffold clearly is a guy who has a shoulder thing going on that, you know, we'll see. But I wouldn't be surprised if a repair was coming after the season. And he's fighting through it to finish the season out. And that guy's tough. He's a really good player, especially as a run blocker. But he's always been, you know, much better run blocker than pass blocker. Those are two different jobs, by the way, Robbie. Have you heard?
Really?
Yeah. Being a good run blocker doesn't mean you're a good pass blocker. He's always been much better as a run blocker. So as a pass blocker. But then you add in the injury, and you can see where you could have problems.
What did you think of the Rappaport report yesterday that Derrick Henry is on track to return by the playoffs or sooner? We talked about you know, some information you had on it last week. What did you think of what Rappaport put out there over the weekend?
Yeah, it's – I mean, I still feel like anytime Rappaport, you know, it's like he's still just trying to get a one-up on Schefter, you know. But, you know, I think there's – I mean, there's optimism. And the key part of that, which matches up with what I've heard and even what I was told by an outside doctor, is big appointment this week. Again, tomorrow is the 6-week mark from Derek's surgery. And traditionally, without knowing the specifics of this case, you can have different timelines, but traditionally at the 6-week mark, the bone should be healed. And so that matches up with what Rappaport said in his report, that there's a big appointment this week. So if the bone is healed, then you move on to the next phase of, okay. So in theory, Derrick Henry, if it is healed, if all went well, in theory, Derrick Henry can go play at Pittsburgh. There's no way he will, but in theory, okay, the bone is healed. You're healthy. Now you go into, by my understanding, a more intense process of, you know, kind of rehab and testing it and seeing what you can do on it and how it feels and what your confidence is and all that stuff. So there's still a lot of information to be found out from it. So I think it's a little bit premature with all this optimism, expected back. I mean, this is a big week, but as long as like the healing is good, now it's the phase of how he feels, how he's running on it, how he's cutting on it. And then at some point, I think if nothing goes wrong, the decision is going to be made to let it rip.
When we come back, we'll get Joe Rexroad's three best and three worst performances yesterday by the Titans against the Jaguars. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game in Music City Man Cave want to treat one lucky listener to a Monastay treatment package. Text CAVE now to 615-737-1025. That's CAVE to 615-737-1025 and be entered for a chance to win the Music City Man Cave Christmas giveaway. Hit up our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Joe, before we get to your three best and three worst performances, some news in the NHL. The Calgary Flames and the Chicago Blackhawks, their game has been postponed tonight. Six members of the Flames and one, or six players of the Flames and one staff member have entered the NHL's COVID-19 protocol today. It's important because the Flames are scheduled to play the Predators tomorrow here at Bridgestone Arena. So that game being postponed against Chicago, obviously nothing's been said about the Preds-Flames game tomorrow, but that would certainly lead to some questions about that one as well. So just want to pass that along. No game tonight between the Calgary Flames and the Chicago Blackhawks as they continue to deal with COVID issues. So, Joe, as you said earlier, COVID-19 lists and COVID-19 news becoming more of a thing in the world of sports as we get into the colder months.
Unfortunately, yeah, no question about it. Every sport, we're seeing more and more of it.
So, Joe Rexroad, your three best and three worst performances for the Titans yesterday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll begin with the best, as we do every week. Your best performer yesterday for the Titans against Jacksonville.
So I'm going to start with Rashawn Evans.
Okay.
And I'm not necessarily saying he was the best player for the Titans, but I think it was the best, maybe most encouraging performance for a guy five games missed with an ankle, coming off, you know, a rough 2020 season that I think cost him his option being picked up, guy who's kind of viewed as on the outs here. And now a guy who knows that Zach Cunningham has been signed and is sort of the same kind of player, but has been a better that kind of player in the league than Rashawn Evans. I mean, he responded exactly as you hope someone would respond. He came out just flying around, and it just seemed like I didn't detect any glaring mistakes. I mean, 8 yards rushing tells you that the Titans up front, not just that they were physical and all that stuff, but that they – you know, that they did the job correctly, you know, that they executed. It's not just effort and strength, it's execution. And I think Rashawn Evans is a big part of that. He makes a great play on the – it's a gift because it's a tip from the receiver play, but still not an easy pick. And I just thought that was – and again, then he talks after the game. You know, it's just he's a pro. And I don't know what the future holds for Rashawn Evans – but he's a credit to the locker room too, and I think he deserves a nod for that.
Yep, good game yesterday from Rashawn Evans. Gets rewarded with the interception as well. By the way, the Preds game against Calgary tomorrow has been postponed, so there will be no Preds game tomorrow against the Calgary Flames, so keep that in mind. So Rashawn Evans, number one on your list. Your number two in terms of the most impressive Titans yesterday.
So there's a lot of candidates here, and you know, one side of the ball heavy. You know, Byard, I thought, was just really good. I mean, amazing. They get 4 picks. Byard doesn't get one of them, but he was very present out there. Landry, as always, and he looks – that's a big development. I thought he looked more like himself. Gets a sack, gets to 11. Autry, Jayon Brown in there with Evans. I mean, there are a lot of candidates, but I'm going to go Christian Fulton. You know, he gave up one play. He got beat down the sideline, I think by Marvin Jones. Where, you know, got to turn your head around, play the ball in the deep part of the field. But he's just really good. It's hilarious to think that Trevor Lawrence actually told Jay Feely he was going to target Christian Fulton. I mean, that's just hilarious. But 2 more passes defended. He gets a pick. He's just – him being back, to me, gives this defense a real chance to be something here as the games get more and more important.
At number three on your list, Rashawn Evans at one, Christian Fulton at two. Number three on your best performances for the Titans yesterday.
Honorable mention is, to me, Tannehill for not turning it over and for taking the beating he took and still making some good plays. But I'm going to go with Deontay Foreman. I just really like how he ran the ball. I think it's clear. He's getting into a rhythm. He's got a physicality that pushes the pile. He can get downhill pretty quickly. He made a heck of a cut on the touchdown run. And I think he's someone that is moving into the feature role until Derrick Henry returns. So I think he deserves that credit. Now the question, of course, with him is, what is up with the arm? What happened? That's the only reason he didn't, to me, get 20 carries yesterday. I mean, Nichols gets in there instead of Hilliard in the second half and gets some carries, but it would have been Foreman, I believe. And we'll see how his health is. But the first half before he got hurt, very encouraging.
Joe Rexroad, your three worst performances from the Titans yesterday, starting at number one.
So I don't have three. So I'm going to break the rules here.
You do whatever you want.
I, I mean, I could throw Randy Bullock on there. You know, I didn't think it was a great day for Todd Downing. Although I will say they had a screen to Hilliard that absolutely is a touchdown.
Yep.
That was a great call, perfect against the look they got. And, you know, the thing that is my only one worst, it was part of the issue there. I mean, like, you're supposed to let guys in to some extent on a screen, right? But you can't let your quarterback get hit before he can even turn his head. So Tannehill actually got rid of the ball, almost still got it to Hilliard, but he couldn't quite put it where he wanted to. So my one, to take all three, is pass protection. Some numbers for you. One, the Titans are fifth worst in the league with 37 sacks allowed. They allowed 25 last season. They could potentially double last season. They were 20th in the league in pass block win rate before yesterday. I haven't seen the updated stats. That's destined to fall. And again, that's destined to fall because of a four sack, 10 quarterback hit game against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Sacked percentage, they are 28th in the league, 8.04% of dropbacks resulting in sacks. Last year, 12th in the league, 4.84. So basically they are twice as bad at protecting the quarterback this year as last year. And again, there are a lot of things that go into that. It's not simple. I know some people are gonna be like, the podcaster, it's his fault. And, you know, it's not one person's fault. I think it's an erosion in some ways in terms of age. I think it's been a hard luck year. I have to think it's a hard luck year for Nate Davis. And that's, again, where you can have some hope that maybe he gets going here and can stay healthy, stay out there and play better, and they can gel as a group. But again, what happens? Saffold hurt, down a couple times, leaves, Brewers in. So once again, we are still waiting for the first game with five Titans offensive line starters starting and finishing a game together. Still has not happened this year. So some of it's not to blame anyone. But I think, as we talked about earlier, there is some communication involved here too that has to be better. It just has to be better. If you can't even consider trying to stretch a defense because you don't believe your quarterback will stay upright that long, what do you think you can do in this league? What do you think you can do in the playoffs? To me, this is the number one concern. It's been probably the worst part of the team consistently all year this year. There have been some good weeks. And if it doesn't get way better quickly, I don't think it's going to end well.
Well, it's a big concern. And, you know, like, to your point, it's not like you're going up against the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. I mean, it was Jacksonville. And your quarterback's getting crushed left and right. So, you know, hopefully the offensive line can stay healthier and start to gel. But here again, this is yet another example of, you got a first-round pick from a year ago that's nowhere to be found on the practice squad up in New York. I don't even know if he's still there. And then you've got your second-round pick from this year who can't even get active on game day, both of which are on the offensive line, and neither one of which are a part of your plans right now in the immediate future. I mean, obviously with Isaiah Wilson, but Dylan Raidens, I mean, it doesn't look like he's getting any closer to being on the field so far this year. So it sure be nice to also, while this is going on, be able to turn around and say, all right, well, we've got two young guys here that maybe can come in and help, and you don't. It just is what it is at this point with the offensive line.
Yeah, and that's – so the down-the-road concern is bigger. You know, like, what's this going to look like? You got tough decisions to make on Lawan and Saffold. I mean, Lawan was talking yesterday after the game, and he's always very good, you know, when he talks. But he had a long answer about what it has meant to him to be here through, well, again, a very impressive six straight winning seasons under John Robinson. No GM's ever had that in this franchise. And Lawan, of course, it's Lawan and Kern, right? Lawan and Kern, the yep. only two guys who remember the 14-15 terribleness of 5-27. And, you know, Lawan had a really good comment about that, but also it sounded like a guy, you know, who knows that this could be it for him. I mean, he has to know. I'm not sold 100% that that's the way the Titans should go, but it's one thing you have to look at. Saffold is another thing you have to look at. Ben Jones is another thing you have to look at. But again, the problem is, who's playing offensive line for you in the future? But in the meantime, you have all those guys, and it's urgent right now. to get that thing figured out.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our friend Darren McFarland. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans' performance against the Jags. And the Nashville Predators are rolling right now, 5 in a row. They sweep their 4-game road trip as well. We'll get his thoughts on all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.